political aid now replaced, and the top structure actually, which actually manages all of the department, was intimately involved in this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members and everyone present. Thank you, Dr. Mahoba, for a clear report. It gives us a clear idea of what really happened with those people who have lost their lives. This is a very painful situation that we're facing, and it really breaks my heart that we're sitting here discussing all these deaths, and I don't see any remorse from the people who are responsible for all of this. I think that people have, it's a matter of people, I see personal sabotage within the stakeholders, the Gauteng Department of Health and Life SADVN and the SADC and all of that. Everyone is trying to protect their skin and no one is taking responsibility, and it really pains me because these are people, these are humans, and they're just taken as numbers and statistics, and their families who have lost their loved ones. Basically, mine is a comment, not more of a question. I would really, really like to see the recommendations, which I welcome full-heartedly by Dr. Mahoba. I would like to see them implemented to the latter. And I'd like to see people, especially people who should be taking responsibility, like Dr. Silibano and Dr. Manamela, being charged for all these murders and taking responsibility for what has happened to these people. Not only disciplinary hearings, but I think criminal charges must be open for these people as well. Like Dr. Mahoba said, I don't know whether it's murder or homicide or whatever it should be called, but it is murder, it is killing of people, and the number keeps going up. And what really makes me angry is the fact that, and amidst all of these things that are happening, people are still lying with a simple thing of just saying this is the real number of the people who died. That says to me, you do not care, and therefore you should face the consequences and the repercussions that are coming your way. So that is my comment on that. And Minister, I hope that when we see that now there are already people who are going at lodging appeals for that and all of that, and I hope that the tribunal that you are going to set up is people who will be taking responsibility and make sure that our country sees that we are still governed in a proper way, in a way that will protect the citizens of South Africa that cannot speak for themselves. So I hope as we are sitting here, we are all taking responsibility and making sure that all these recommendations will be implemented, and all the people, including the MEC, because I don't think her resignation is enough. I think she should also face charges for what she has done. And I think as honorable members sitting here now, we must take it as a personal responsibility to make sure that these things happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Firstly, let me also join in with my colleagues in applauding Dr. Mahoba for such an important exercise that he has taken without fear, in making sure that those that cannot speak for themselves have hope. And I also must also thank Dr. Motsoaledi for making sure that when we launched this, the Ombudsman OHSC, to make sure that the person that is going to lead in that department does exactly what he's meant for. And I think that was very important, because in the deployment at times, we put people in positions just for the sake of making sure that they protect the organization. But he was there to protect the people that couldn't speak for themselves. That is our mental ill patient. You know, this is a sad day to listen to this. I just felt it is just too much to listen to. Specifically that it is our people, by our people. That is the saddest part. It's a disgrace in our country. And it has tarnished the image of this department, especially to the people that have their mental ill people. They will start thinking, I wonder where they're sending my people to, our people to. Having said that, my greatest concern is the communication between the National Department of Health together with the Provincial Department of Health. And I hope that it will have to be really discussed probably in the highest level of government to give powers to our national minister, so that our DG can do her work. Because I cannot understand that DG had a meeting with all the stakeholders and still did not see this coming. It's so irritating sitting here. You feel like you could just scream that this happened while people knew there were meetings with, you know, that were sitting, and still no one saw this coming. That we can lose the lives of the innocent that came to our hospitals to be looked after. I just want to find out from the department now, because I think all my colleagues have covered me. Are you, Minister, going to give instruction? I think it should be an instruction to the ombudsman to do an audit in all our mental health facilities in the country, so that we make sure that this never happens, because probably it has been happening, and because we never knew. Seeing that the provinces are doing what they want to do with and bypassing and sidelining the minister. So somehow, I think, Minister, it resides with you that this audit has to be done nationally, so that we make sure that our people, and also the budgeting, make sure that it covers our people, because I think that's where we have a problem in, and how we look after our mental ill patients. And, you know, to think that one in three people in South Africa has this illness. With our juvenile mental health patients, who most of them are on drugs and alcohol abuse, with nowhere to go, because if you go to the primary health facilities, where our people are supposed to be going, where they are forced to go because they do not have medical aid to attend the most, you know, expensive rehab sites. Do we have capacity at the primary health care level? What is the plan there for our people? Because this is now the poor of the poorest. That's why they end up, I don't know if it's NGOs, or the death homes, the death camps. I don't know what they are. I honestly also don't know what name we should give them, because this is where people die. I this is just too much for us. But Honourable Minister, education is going to be very important, health education, and empowering our people so that they know if they have a person who is mentally ill, what do they do, where does this person go, so that even the community becomes supportive of these people, they also look after this person than what it is today. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks very much. Can honourable members limit themselves to the presentation by the ombuds? We're still going to come to the second presentation by the minister, processes, measures, systems, and everything else that has already been put in place, or that are going to be put in place, in making sure that we address this issue. Jephthah?
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I must also welcome the report by the Ombudsman. And what you are saying, Chair, is what I wanted to suggest before, that maybe if we would have taken the minister first, he would have limited our questions, because I'm sure he will be talking more on the findings and the recommendations by the Ombudsman, and you would have answered more of the questions we have. But many questions have been answered, have been asked by the members. I'm only having one question now, hoping that the others I'm having will be covered by the minister when he's updating us on the progress, on the findings and the recommendations by the Ombudsman. It is clear, Honorable Chair, that there was no proper plan to transfer the patients to the 27 NGOs with invalid licenses. Given the reported steps taken to prevent the department provincially from transferring the patients from the Life Healthcare SEDM, and given the Ombudsman's report, which reveals clearly that these more than 100 patients died under unlawful conditions, how can we say that the department nationally is not affected as the department provincially? That is the question I'm having now, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Firstly, Chair, I want to welcome the report from the Ombudsman, and also the presentation with the background presentation that was given by the Minister of Health. And Chair, I think I have many questions to ask regarding this whole matter. I take it that in Gauteng there's an executive, and the MEC alone, when she took that decision, was this decision or this plan of step down not reported to the executive of Gauteng? Because I'm just imagining when one MEC just wakes up and decides that today I'm going to do a step down, and she does as she pleases. To me, it's very strange. But also, Che, I'm worried that, you know, this whole saga is like it's only Gauteng provincial government that is responsible. But I think, Chairperson, there's also MINMEC meetings that are sitting with the minister. And when the MEC was presenting this thing to MINMEC, what was the advice of the minister? I heard the DG was talking about the plan that she requested from Gauteng, and that plan did not come through. And what did the national department, the mental health division do with this matter? Because already there was a problem. Even if provinces, they do their own things, Chairperson. But remember, national department is the one that allocates funds for budgets for provincial departments. That's why I'm subject to correction. Yeah. You know? That's why I'm getting worried. But it's conditional grants. No, it's fine. Even if it's conditional grants, but they come from national. I think the other question that I'm having is that with all these NGOs, Prof, didn't they have boards did you interview the boss? And what was the response of the boss? And I think the boss also must be accountable. Because there's no way that we leave out the boss when they were there, when all these things were happening. But specifically with the board that was supposed to be advising the MEC, now is claiming that, no, the MEC was overpowering them. I don't take that one. They must be held accountable too. Because the MEC was not having a gun. Whereby people will say, hey, I'm scared of this woman. If I say this, he's going to shoot me. They have a constitutional obligation and a response. They've got responsibilities as the board. So they must be held accountable too. I think the other thing, you know, as you were presenting, Prof, I was just asking myself if in Gauteng, besides these 27 NGOs, are there any other legal, at least those NGOs that are licensed, who are not rendering or offering the same services to these mental health patients? And with regards to those ones, are there deaths reported or there are not deaths? Because you see the challenges. Sometimes, I don't want to sound insensitive, but you know, sometimes, even when we are sick, you go to a hospital, you can die if it's your time. You know? So sometimes people will take these things as if, mthambe, these people were not supposed to die, only to find that maybe some of them, the causes of their disease, we're going to make them to pass on. I don't want to sound insensitive, but the way it's presented, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, bekungeke bafe abanye abantu or mhlambe, yeah, but it's like that. But what I'm saying is that we all agreeing that this is bad. This issue of stepping down or taking patients to NGOs was a bad decision. We are all agreeing. But the other matter that I'm concerned with is the unethical behavior of the lawyers. I think that something needs to be done. You need not to leave that matter out, Prof. Because if there are lawyers who are touting these families now, who wants to do other things and what, those lawyers must also be reported to their law society. Because you see, if people will just use this thing for profit gain instead of people protecting our people, then it's a challenge. My last one. I think let's agree that the department, when the minister is going to respond on some of the questions, they must tell us on when are they intending to do the amendments on the Mental Health Care Act and be presented in Parliament. I think that will be my last one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, as I've said, progress will be given by the minister when he presents progress, and this is part of the recommendation that is in the report. So let's not entertain there. We're just seeking clarity to the report presented by the Ombuds. That's where we are. Let's limit ourselves there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to join honorable members in welcoming this report. It's so comprehensive, though it's painful report. Yes, Chair, in his presentation, the professor indicated that as we are gathered here, more lives is still being lost. Then question is, what are plans in place to ensure that those lives of the patients are being saved?
also, Chairperson, want to look at recommendation number 13. It speaks of those NGOs operating under invalid licenses, but give them a lengthy time frame of 45 days. To me, I just think maybe it is unfair when we say we are losing lives, but prolonging the period for those unlawful NGOs to be keeping our patients. And lastly, Chairperson, because a lot of things and questions have been asked, I'm just urging the department to ensure that proper procedures are followed with regard to the disciplinary actions against those that are mentioned in the report. I'm really, Chairperson, not in a position to prejudge them as they are mentioned in the report. I only believe due process will be followed, and these that we have received just a report and recommendations, and I think we need to treat them as such. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. We welcome this comprehensive report, and we hope that we are not going to get you doing reporting again on the same type of problem. Let's hope this is your last report. And now, your appeal for not making this report a political scoring point scoring exercise is highly appreciated, because there is a tendency of people turning tragedy into a point scoring exercise. Has the department safeguarded the patients who are still in the hands of the NGOs? That should be expedited, the safeguarding of the other people, so that we don't have the tragedy prolonged unnecessarily. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome the report from the professor. Really appreciate it. Has been long waited since we heard about the incident in September. We really appreciate the report that we're getting. I do want to say, Chair, that some of the deaths could have been avoided. Listening to the report and the incidents, the process that took place, some of the deaths could have been avoided. I agree that you cannot prevent death when it is there, but listening at the report, there is no doubt that the process contributed to some of the deaths. We don't have a report of the causes as yet, but just having this report, you can see that some of them could have been avoided. Honorable Chair, how I wish Gauteng province was here, because for me, I have more questions for them, especially after receiving this report. I have more questions for them. One of my first questions will be why? Why this? Why do this to our people, especially the most vulnerable in our community? Why this? Maybe, Chair, there is a need to invite the province. I don't know the side. In our side, we are allowed to do so, which I think is something that we're going to do as a committee, so that we have full information and try to avoid similar cases happening in the future. Because if we leave it at that level, we may not be able to get to the bottom of the issues, why they happened. They might be having other reasons of which we think they might have indicated them to you. Chair, as for the attitude, we agree with you. We had an experience. Last year, we invited all provinces that are having some difficulties. The attitude from the political head, it was, we picked that up as a committee from the MEC minister, sorry. Yeah.
She mentioned inviting people and she didn't say who and
no, we invited all 7 provinces, Department of Health and Provinces, you remember, Minister, you attended the first part. The attitude from the minister, we did pick it up and we raised from the MEC. We did raise it and we did raise some issues about that as a committee because it was very much apparent. It's not a surprise to us to hear that there is an attitude or there was an attitude. I do want to say maybe there is a need to a minister to maybe extend this investigation to all other provinces to see what is happening in other institutions besides this one. That will assist us to deal with some of the issues, if there are issues, because the type of patients that we're talking about, most of them are not the people who can speak on their experiences where they are placed. So there might be a need for a further investigation in other institutions, whether in the province or other provinces, so that we can know the extent of the problem that we are having as a province, as a country. It's unfortunate that the mandate was limited to this. Just yesterday when we had a meeting with the department, we realized as a committee that as part of our oversight, we are doing very minimum oversight because most of the work that is done in our health facilities is done by provinces. And we keep on asking questions from the department nationally, but only to find that most of the things are done by provinces. We've concluded yesterday, Chair, that in our next engagement where the department has to account, we'll also invite provinces, so that they can respond on some of the issues that we picked up as a committee, not only to us from the department, because some of the areas are done by provinces. One area that I would want to ask is there, I don't know whether it falls to those questions that you said we must not ask, is there a case opened by relatives of the deceased? And one is also worried about the relationship between the province and the national. One would have expected a province to see national as a support to them. But the manner in which this thing happened, it's like the national was enforcing itself to the province, wanting to know what is happening, can we assist? They were not even invited. And also to say, no, there was no need to report because it is the provincial mandate. One would expect provinces to see national as support to them. Chair, I will end there, but just to say, one would really want to have a session with the province to hear from them why and how to prevent this in the future. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks very much. Before I hand over to the ombuds and the minister, I just want to raise a few issues as well. In the context of what Honorable James raised, in terms of responsibility beyond Gauteng provincial government, I'm raising this in the context that the DG was informed about this matter in October 2015. And then subsequent to that, she then received a draft plan. And then from there, what was the action of the DG in the context of Section 5, subsection 1, and Section 6, subsection 3 of the Mental Health Act? Because it gives the DG certain powers. When the DG heard that there was this process, and that's where even says she requested Professor Freeman to prepare a report to the minister. And what was the report saying? And what did the minister and the DG do about that report? Because you are saying the report was saying there might be contravention. What did you do about that? After realizing that there is a process that Gauteng provincial government is engaging upon, which bothers around the violation of the law, which bothers around the issues that are in your terrain as the DG, which you are supposed to be the one that issue, that designates areas in terms of Section 5, in terms of Section 5.1. Because they were removing people from the original designated areas to another one, which was therefore supposed to be, in terms of that law, be done by yourself. What have you done? So that we clearly understand what a role did you play, realizing that there was this process that might result towards the contravention of the law, which then at a later stage has resulted to this disaster. I just want to get a clarity on this. And then the recommendation, Prof, if you can just clarify which sections of the Act, the Mental Health Act, that in your view requires to be reviewed, and which powers needs to be taken away from provinces to the national minister. Because I've tried to go through the Act, and I've seen that the minister has the power to make regulations, nobody else. MECs are not allowed to make regulations around this matter. It's only the minister that got the power to do so. Is it the question of the law, or is the question of the capacity of the national department to have monitoring and evaluation system in place? Because we must be able to distinguish that area of capacity to, because they put norms and standards. After they've put the norms and standards, is there a system by the national department to make sure that these norms and standards are followed by provinces? What monitoring and evaluation mechanism exists in the national department to ensure that these systems, these norms and standards, are implemented by provinces? Because you can't just make norms and standards and then you don't put systems to ensure the implementation of it. It can't make sense. So we must be able to see whether is it a question of the law or is the question of the capacity of the National Department to be able to ensure that the norms and standards are implemented by provincial departments or government. So if we can just clarify which area in the Act that requires amendment, or which powers in the Act that needs to be taken away from provinces and be given to the national minister in relation to mental health, so that we are clear on that particular area in terms of, so that it's not left for in terms of guessing. The appropriate legal action that must be taken against the NGOs, in your view, to find them knowingly that they are operating illegal or unlawful, when you engage them, did you come to the conclusion that they knew that they are operating unlawful? Since they had letters that they appointed them, were they aware that this was fraudulent and therefore they are operating illegal or unlawful? And then the last recommendation around the strengthening of the independence of the review board. What do you think needs to be done? What exactly that is missing in that independence? Because when I read the Act, I found them to be independent. But if individuals decide not to be independent, that's why I agree with Ngobendaba that, those review board must take responsibility as well. Because there is nothing that was compelling them to act in the manner that they've acted. Because they are independent, they are not employees of government. They should have taken a position on this matter. But no, they decided not to take a position on this matter. And therefore, what is it therefore that must be done to make sure that you strengthen their independence beyond what is currently existing in the legislation? I agree with you that your observations on the officials having fear, instilled fear by the MEC, I agree with you. Because we had an oversight visit last year, October somewhere. And in our last visit, we then had a courtesy visit to the MEC just to update him what we found. And the arrogance he displayed, and she wanted even to control us as members. Until I had to say, no, MEC, you can't do this to us. We're not your officials. So it is possible, I agree with the observation, that these officials, they were paralyzed, fear was still on them, they could not even give an objective opinion into the MEC because of the manner in which how she was applying an iron fist to everybody. We experienced that ourselves, until we have to tell her, no. We're not accountable to you. So that observation, it's a true observation. We've seen it ourselves. I want to concur as well with what the co-chair was saying. We'll hand it over to you, Professor. And then you take what you think belongs to you, and then
I'll
the rest will then hand over to the minister to respond and also deal with the progress comprehensively as well.
When I respond?
Yes.
Okay.
So that because we don't have time left much.
Let me start with a general point. You know, this issue of collective responsibility, it's very problematic in our society because everybody takes no responsibility because there is a collective. It's a very big thing, and you can either laugh at it. But when you get appointed, there is no collective appointments. You advertise a job, you describe a job, and it's got responsibility. But when people mess up in the job, they say, no, I didn't make the decision alone. I made it with so-and-so. But it is your job. So I often heard this, I think, in my inquiry with people. And when you pin them down, you found that actually they made the decision. It's, as I say, we use things to protect ourselves rather than to actually take responsibility. So I think we must be very careful when we talk about collective responsibility that it doesn't get abused to the point where people get appointed and then to go and do misdemeanors and then they are covered up by this so-called collective responsibility. Let me give you a specific example in this case. In one of the memos I received was that the decision to deinstitutionalize, it's actually in my report, was taken in Honorable Makura's office. That is what was said. And if you read English carefully, it doesn't say it was taken by Makura. It says it was taken in his office. It doesn't even tell you whether he was there in the office or not. So if you don't read English carefully, you realize this may be actually, as the minister said, you use somebody's name to cover up for what you were doing. So I had to confront the Honorable Premier and ask him, what actually took place in your office? And the answer was, nothing ever took place in his office about deinstitutionalization. So as I say, if you just gloss over it, you would have said, oh my God, this thing was actually taken in the Premier's office, therefore it has got the stamp of David as the Premier. And actually nothing ever took place in his office, first of all. He wasn't there. There was never a meeting in relation to this matter. At least on record, that's what he said, unless he's covering up. But you know, you had to ask. But remember that even the sentence that said that told you that they were clear that they were covering something. They didn't say it was taken by him or in his presence or he was part of the meeting. They just said we were in his office. So you could be in my office and mess around, but should I take responsibility for you making a decision in my office? The answer is no. So these are the issues that come up. Now, this issue of fear again, and it comes to the issue of independence. In our country, we have a constitution that tells us exactly how to live and how to do things. And how often do we actually subterfuge that constitution in the way we conduct ourselves? So you can have a law, and you can actually filibuster around the law and not practice it. So you give there's a saying that, We are in power, but not in charge, or something like that. You know, you can have these things happening. So you give somebody a false type of independence that is legal and it's in writing, but in practice, that's not what was happening. So the oversight board in Gauteng, who appointed the MEC, is not appointed independently. So you make the first rule wrong is appointed by the person that they are going to oversee. And therefore, they feel beholden to that person. Secondly, that person can also appoint lekis, because she's the one who appoints. So although the law is there, its practice is incongruent with what is happening. So the reason why, I mean, I don't disagree that they are responsible. They actually, if you read my report, they accepted that they were responsible. They accept responsibility and accountability. But I think we mustn't assume that what is law is what is happening in reality. And we have seen that too many times in our constitution, in our society, that people hide behind certain things. Whilst the law may appear clear, the practice is not clear. It gets hidden up. To come to the issue of lawyers and they touting people, I don't think I want to enter into that domain. It's because you have to then prepare a case and so forth. But actually, it's not an issue. It's just bad ethics that are taking place because people are trying to make money in our country. I think somebody will have to take that. Did I interview the NGO boss? The answer is no. I didn't do that because I thought I had received enough information from the managers of the board to understand that there were issues of governance. So I didn't actually, some of them do have boards. But for example, the relationship between Mosiho and Dagane, I tried to probe what was happening there with the board. I didn't speak to the members of the board, but obviously there is an interaction there that bridges good corporate governance in that process. But specifically to answer your question, no, I didn't interview them. The NGOs, should I have renamed them? That was not my mandate. I could only see that they are operating under invalid licenses, so I can't give them a new name. I should just describe what I found, and that's all. But if people want to go into a nomenclature issue, it's a nice hobby to have. Did I give individual deaths? I remember that I was given a cohort to analyze, and when you do that, you try to remove individuals. You try to see how many people died from, for example, dehydration. And you don't say so-and-so died this way, so-and-so died that way. And you try to present it in a manner that, first of all, anonymizes people, because then somebody's going to, when they look for through PIA or whatever you call them, they're going to say, what did this one die of? What did this one, you know, when was this? When did this diarrhea start? Now you go into a process that takes away the comprehensiveness of the analysis. So the 36 patients that for whom the MEC gave us the details, the analysis of their death as a cohort is in the report. Remember that the other patients that came by, we don't have their complete files like we have of those 36 because the MEC and her department had to prepare them. The others I'm still receiving now are people that died maybe even during the period, but I'm only discovering them now, and I've got to look for their files and so forth. So there is a problem about the details that we have. We can confirm that they are no longer alive, but we don't necessarily have the comprehensive details through which we can analyze them. But the 37 or 38 that we received their details have been analyzed, and they are part of the analysis here. So I think we must just get an understanding of that, that was the original thing. But also, I didn't mention this. When the MEC made the announcement in Parliament, in the legislature, that there were 36 people died, when you look at the dates of death, actually 77 people had already died by that time. So it wasn't like, I mean, if she had been operating in a system where the information systems were up to scratch, she should have known almost instantly who had died in the system in mental health, because she just got a directorate. But she didn't know on that day, but she also didn't know in November on the 29th when I asked her. So I don't know whether you can call that a lag period. I mean, you're having a national disaster, and by the end of 10 weeks, you still don't know what's happening in the system. So that was a big problem. Now, in terms of the NGOs, you know, the NGOs, remember, are under the MEC. They are the ones that audit them, they recommend them, they sort of assess them. So if you're going to deal with their legalities, you've got to deal with them through the provinces, through the MEC or the structure which is called the Mental Health Directorate. So I didn't feel that I should be specifying that because they are actually the NGOs within the province. Are there NGOs there that were okay? I think I mentioned in my report that there were 11 NGOs where no death occurred. I have to say they were not licensed. So I'm not condoning the fact that because they were unlicensed and then death occurred, they are okay. It's just statistically it didn't happen. And it's also fair to record that not every NGO death occurred, because it would be wrong to paint a picture like if you go to every NGO, statistically you may not die because, as I say, 11, no one died there. They are still unlicensed, and we need to deal with that in the legal framework. Now, did they know what they were doing? I think there is no excuse in law for not knowing. I think the law says that even in simple English, that there's no remedy for you not knowing the law and making mistakes. You know, you have to know. But importantly, they knew that they had no staff. They knew that they had no professional staff. They knew that they were not being paid, and they had not actually organized the system of their own being resourced properly. All of those things were quite clear, but of course they will make a different argument, and maybe that's why it's important, I think, to meet with this thing. Who is responsible, James? I thought I identified the people that are responsible. And again, I want to narrow this and maybe answer your other question. We have 9 provincial MECs. They are not appointed by the National Minister of Health. They are appointed by their premiers. So that's a very big issue. And then you expect the same National Minister of Health to oversee the whole health about people that he had no hand in appointing, in their competence, in whether they share the same visions as him or her. So you have a problem of, as I said, the rules that we have or the acts that we have that facilitate a separation, but then pretend somewhere that somebody else above is responsible. You can't have that. It's a very big contradiction. How can Minister Mutswaledi be responsible for people that he did not appoint? Because they'll say, you didn't appoint me. I was appointed by the Premier. That's one angle. The other angle, as I say, is the act that actually facilitate a culture of not a common purpose, where, of course, because I've got power, I can do what I like. It's allowed in the act, and therefore, when I do what I like, I've got a cover under an act that is there in our laws, and it makes that difference. Now, the other thing that you asked me was what are in the powers of this? Let's remember that, as I say, mental health care was, and the contracts before, were all powers that are within the national minister. And when we changed the National Act in 2002, we removed many powers that resided within the national government and put them in the provincial government. And I think we need to re-examine all of those things that were taken away. Mental health just happens to be one of those, but there were several other areas in the health system that allowed for this so-called concurrence things to happen. But, I mean, I leave that to lawyers to actually re-examine the old acts, the new acts, in relation to the Constitution and try and harmonize them. Because, as I say, certain powers and certain things are becoming more important nationally, whose powers cannot reside in the province, and maybe certain powers that should not reside in the national minister either. So I think it should not be simply looked in one direction. I think it should be looked in all directions. And finally, just to come to the law, remember that, you know, we are now 22 years into a democracy. Okay? Yesterday, I was sitting in a meeting of higher education at the NPC. And everybody was saying, you know, in 1996, we had the National Commission on Higher Education. And it made broad recommendations. But what were the things that it didn't make recommendation about? It did not make any recommendations about fees. They knew it was a discussion. There were task teams about fees in 1996 when we were sitting in the National Commission. We made absolutely no recommendations. Today, 23 years, the students are roaming all over the place and say fees must fall. It's as if we never knew. We knew it, but we did nothing. The second, it was the knowledge project. What kind of knowledge were we going to teach? Who were we going to teach it for? We all knew that we live in Africa. We have our own histories. We have got our, and these are not part of our knowledge system. We're still learning about other people that have got no existential processes with us, but we know so much about them. You know, my kids know more about Prince Diana than they would never know about Shaka. It doesn't bother them that they should know about Shaka, but if they don't know about Prince Diana, they get very anxious. You know, they feel out of place. Why do we have this kind of thing? They knew that in 1995, they did nothing about it. And the reason was, and the confession comes out, they were all afraid of the historic white universities. They couldn't raise these issues because they were afraid of it, UCT, former Natal, Rhodes. So we have had a conversation that we now can revisit 22 years. And I suspect that even with the Health Acts and other acts, we were doing these things sheepishly. We were still new. We didn't know what we were doing. I think we have learned something. We can now be a little bit more bolder and be ourselves in a new country that we feel much more comfortable, that we are part of it or we can shape it. I don't think in 1994... you know, people felt strong enough. As they say in my mother tongue, you know, we always deferred to them. Even though we were with them talking, we deferred most things to them, and that's where we are. What do we do now? I agree with the issue of inquest. I think I didn't have it here. It's because I knew that Section 27 were already taking the inquest. I think that should happen. It's a legal process on its own, and I was told not to actually get too involved in it when I sought advice, but it's an important process that must take place, and I think that requires answers and so forth. How do I fix the system? As I said, I think this is for the minister to fix the system. That's why he's employed as a minister. But I really just think sometimes we have created laws that tie his hands at the moment. And I think we need to, now 22 years into the process, I think we need to open up and say, we want to shape our country, we want to open it up. We are a little bit much more stronger and much more confident than we were 22 years ago. How do we change and how do we update the laws that we made, that we made a little bit being inexperienced? And I think there will be no harm in that. We are a society that is evolving. I don't think most of the people that are in government have never known what it means to govern, you know. So that's my contribution, Chair.
No, thanks very much. We'll hand over to you, Minister Ndichi, just to give progress and also in the process give a...
I will give the progress, but she has got questions to answer which you ask directly.
I will suggest that let's deal with the progress and then in the process then deal with the responses and everything. Start with the progress and then in the process then she will then come in and then deal with the answers. Deal with the progress, Minister.
Thank you.
And then when the minister finishes, then hand over to you to then deal with some of the responses which might be related to some of the progress.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. As you know, the Health Umbat released the report on the 1st of February 2017 at 11 hours. and there were 18 recommendations to the state as a whole, but six specifically for the Gauteng Department of Health. Ever since the release of the report, I know that there have been lots of debates and statements over the media from political parties, civil society, even from today, about what must happen. Some people have got their own verdicts and what needs to happen. But I just want to emphasize again, Chairperson, most of the things people are proposing are actually in this report. This report is very comprehensive, including the matters of whether there must be criminal investigations, inquests. It's only that he didn't write them in exactly those words. But when you go through this recommendation, you'll find that it's there. For instance, the issue of inquest as such has been said many times legally. The police are not doing these forensic investigations just to bury them. They are doing forensic investigation, and they've been doing so from September. Surely they must end up somewhere. But I also want you as legislators to know, at the moment, the Inquest Act that is still used in the country is an act that was passed during the Union of South Africa, not even during the Republic. I want you to know that. And so it has got certain serious, it has not yet been changed, it has got certain serious restrictions. I discovered this on a very sensitive case where I had to fight with some professors who were taking the Union Act and slapping it at me. During that case of when, as you know, there was the unfortunate death of the daughter of the Minister of Health in Zimbabwe at UCT. And when we had to get into that matter, firstly at the provincial level, then with the university. And when I was intervening, I was even asked whether I'm doing so because the father is a minister. And they'll say, no, did you read the Act, Minister? This Act says this. And you look at it was written during the Union, and it says you have got nothing to say. So I just want you to know those as legislators, when you get angry and sort of try to look into these issues about our role as legislators, that there's going to be a legal inquest, it's a Union of South Africa Inquest Act. It doesn't vest within the department, but it's there for all the inquests about any death that needs to be investigated by police. Now, having said so, Chairperson, I just want you to know that people are making recommendations and verdicts that already appear in this report. You just have to read very carefully. let me take these recommendations one by one. Recommendation number one, that the Gauteng Mental Health Marathon Project must be established. This project has been stopped. In other words, it has been stopped, and we have commenced with preparations for relocations of patients in appropriately equipped centers. And I shall elaborate on this later. But the process started immediately. We didn't wait for the 45 days given by the UMBAS, as people are complaining about. The second one is that the Premier of Gauteng Province must, in the light of the findings, consider the suitability of the MEC. As you know, The Premier, I know that many people said he should have acted before the MEC resigned. The UMBAS, in terms of the law, has to give even the preliminary report to people who are affected and to the minister and all that. So these people knew even before the final report was read what was contained in it, and they could act in a particular way. It's not that it's something that was not known. But by the time the Premier decided, because it's not that the Premier of Gauteng was not speaking to me. After this issue of 36 deaths, he asked me and he said, no, I'll have to wait for the report of the UMBAS, because we have put the UMBAS, we need to know the facts. Even this story about what decision was taken in Gauteng about the Mental Health Act, unfortunately, I already have it claims, but the Premier of Gauteng said he will answer that to himself. When the time comes, he will sit and answer exactly what was discussed and what did he know and what not. So let me not do that. But at the moment, the issue of MEC has happened even before the report, and there's a new MEC, Dr. Gwen Ramokopa, as you know, who have studied, and I'm sitting with her almost every day or talking to her about how to reorganize the department, because it definitely needs reorganizing. The third recommendation is that disciplinary proceedings must be instituted against the HOD, Dr. Diego Ephraim Silvano, for gross misconduct or incompetence. Now, you are aware that this is not ruled by the sentiments of the Umbas or our sentiment here, or the sentiment of the minister. It's ruled by the Public Service Act and the LRA, the Labor Relations Act. They've got certain provisions which must be followed. If you don't follow them, you act perhaps out of your humanity, your consciousness, etc. There are consequences, Chairperson. I can give you a good example. In the Steve Biko Academic Hospital, a DRC doctor was once discovered by the professor of neurosurgery that this person is not a neurosurgeon, but he was registered fraudulently with the Health Professions Council as a neurosurgeon. And when the professor discovered, obviously he blew the top gasket, and the man was removed immediately. Action was taken, he was taken away. He went to the CCMA and won. Yes, the CCMA, they didn't say he's a neurosurgeon. They just said you did not follow procedures in the law. And if you don't follow procedures, it means this man must go back to his work. Now you can imagine somebody having committed such a thing simply because you were in a hurry, because of anger and all that. You act on the spur of the moment. It's a good thing in human terms and in terms of emotions. But there are laws in the country which were promulgated by yourself here, that you can't do this, you can't do that. Before you suspend a person, you must write them a letter and give them a week or so and ask them to give cause why you can't suspend them. They were all laws that were promulgated by this parliament. Sometimes we tend to forget them, and I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming you. I'm also a legislator. I still remember how we attacked the legal advisor of the IEC in 2000 when he came to, I was in Limpopo, to workshop us about the allocation of seats in local government. Immediately he finished, all the parties raised their hands and went for him. And he said, but this is your law. I'm not a member of parliament. You pass this law. I'm just following it. I remember it was only Azap who said, we are the only ones who have got the right because we are not in the first parliament. So we're not guilty of this. So we always pass laws and we forget that they are there. So this issue, they have to follow the law. Fortunately, they followed it, and the HOD has since been suspended. Now comes the other, the Director of Mental Health. It had to wait for the new HOD to be appointed. But by the way, the HOD was suspended on the 8th of February, and immediately after his suspension, that was a day before the State of Nation, Dr. Ernest Kinoshi, who is the CEO of Steve Biko Academic Hospital, was appointed to act. So he's only a week in the job, but within that week, he has already started proceeding against the Director of Mental Health in terms of these proceedings. And you know, if you mention the proceedings like, yes, we're going to suspend this person, it makes mockery of the law, because they said, no, there's a provision that I must show a cause why I can't be suspended. But this decision was already made. The minister was already talking about it openly. So all those things, I can assure you, are still being followed. It's called precautionary suspension. Then the other people, what do you call? Recommendation number 5. The findings against Dr. Manamela and Dr. Sullivan, that must be reported to their respective, it says here, respective association. Now, I am explaining by that the ombudsman, because he didn't put it in those words. He means for Dr. Sullivan or the HOD, we must write to the Health Professions Council of South Africa, the HPCSA, and a letter will be written in that regard. What you are still investigating legally is whether when you report this person, you do it after the disciplinary action has been completed or before. We are still trying to ask lawyers which one comes first, whether they can happen simultaneously. Precisely because emotionally I know what to do, but legally we've got to follow the law. Yes, Dr. Manamela has to be reported to the nursing council. She's not a medical doctor. She has got a PhD in nursing, so she's a nurse by profession. And we are going to have to write to South African Nursing Council. That's the director of mental health. Recommendation number 6, corrective disciplinary action must be taken against members of the Gauteng Department of Health. That's one chief director, 5 deputy directors, 1 the chair of Mental Health Review Board, the very one that you were saying, whether they've got powers, whether the MEC controls them. The UMBAT says there must also be disciplinary action against this person because for the reasons that you have said, that maybe they should have stood their ground. And then from there is the CEO and acting CEO of the Cullinan Care and Rehabilitation Center. Now, steps towards these processes have also commenced since the new HOD came into being. And please let me not elaborate for the reasons I've already given you about the law. But steps have already started. And number 7, all these remedial actions recommended above must be instituted within 45 days and progress be reported to the chief executive officer of the health standard compliance within 90 days. As you read all the 6 recommendations, we didn't wait for the 45 days. They started the very first day, you know, because the 2 DGs of Gauteng and National met on the 2nd. The recommendations were made on the 1st. They met on the 2nd. They even started visiting some of the institutions. So we did not wait for a period of 45 days. So we are within that period, and within 90 days, we can be able to report, as it says. There are 2 different days here. In other words, the UMBAT was saying all these recommendations, I don't want you to wait and say I'm still doing this, I'm preparing this, and 45 days later nothing has started. That's what it meant. It did not mean that we must wait and only after 45 days started. So we started on the very second day, on the very first day, I mean to say, after the report, which was the 2nd. The number 8, the UMBAT fully support the ongoing SAPS and forensic investigation underway. The findings and outcome of this investigation must be shared with appropriate agencies so that appropriate action must be where justified. Yes, I think he has just explained it, but I want to explain it further. SAPS has started with this work as early as September 2016 for forensic investigation. They are still busy even helping to identify the bodies. And the UMBAT has even queried that in some death certificates written natural causes. But remember, when the MEC announced in Parliament that there are 36 people who have died, and the UMBAT said it was already 77 at that time, my own ministerial advisory committee, which in 48 hours visited only 60, I mean 17 NGOs, they already knew the figure of 60 at that time. But some of the people were already buried, by the way, when this was discovered. So which means the inquest will be without postmortems, because I don't know how many postmortems were done. That's what we are still reconciling. Our understanding, which the UMBAT has clearly defined today, was that by findings being shared with appropriate agencies, structures like the prosecuting authority. I realize that every one of you here wanted the minister or the UMBAT to say somebody must be criminally charged. That decision is made by MPA in law. It's not made by the UMBAT or me. And so you could not have put it in those letters here, and that no, so-and-so must be criminally charged and all that. He said, police investigate, we are investigating. You give all the information to NPA. They are the only ones who decide that this person must be charged, this one must be prosecuted, this one cannot be prosecuted, and give reasons. They are the only ones who are empowered to do so. All that we are doing is to give all the information. For instance, when postmortems must be done, the forensic report will hand it over to all of them. And so the UMBAT was avoiding to specifically say Dr. James must be charged criminally, because he can't do so. The NPA will just give them information, meaning that you already realize that there is a possibility of criminality in this whole thing. Number 9, the National Minister of Health should request the South African Human Rights Commission. It has also been a question here. Where else? The UMBAT was very broad. He didn't even say only provinces. There was a question here that the minister needs to go and investigate what other provinces are doing. It's already a recommendation. And it says a systemic and systematic review by the Human Rights Commission, not only in government or health facilities, everywhere where a mental patient, whether it's in social development, it's in the private sector, is what the Human Rights Commission has been given that job as a recommendation by the UMBAT. And I've already written a letter last week to the Human Rights Commission to inform them officially. Obviously, they already knew. Remember, they were also interviewed by the UMBAT in this investigation. But I officially wrote to them last week to say, this is your job, you better prepare and start immediately. So that everywhere where people are being taken care of, even the elderly and all that, for human rights issues, that's going to be done, but it's not a job, because it's systematic and systemic. If you understand those words, systematic and systemic. It's not something that can happen within a short space of time. It's a huge amount of work. I don't know what the time frame could be, because they are still going to gauge about their capacity. Number 10, appropriate legal proceedings should be instituted or administrative action taken against NGOs that were found to have been operating under unlawfully and where the patients died. We were waiting for the technical team of experts to visit them, and they've done so. And we're giving the report. Today is Wednesday. On Monday night, we're giving this report after the visits, and I'm going to come to them later. But there were questions here about whether the NGOs could have known the law, and the professor has answered it, that ignorance is punishable by law. That's a legal principle, but it's not saying we must punish them for that. There's no adult human being in this world who doesn't know that to take care of a sick patient, you need to have a certain amount of skills. You can't just go and say, I'm going to take care of mental patients, and perhaps what the UMBAT may not have emphasized, but in the report, in the press conference, I remember, emphasized it. Part of the reason why Gauteng does not even know who died, where, how many, is the manner in which these patients were taken, as you said in the report. There was no process whereby they were sitting and say, you and you, you go to Tagalan, you and... The NGOs took vans and go there and just picked. It's in the report. It's in the report. That's why he said it's chaotic. In other words, you just take your van and look. That's why he said it was like a cattle auction. It's in the report. It's not me who is studying. It's only that maybe today he didn't emphasize it. In other words, people are sitting there and saying, I'm taking this one, I'm taking this one, I'm taking that one. So there might not be records, and you take them to an NGO. No adult human being can tell me that they don't know that that's wrong. That you need to be trained to know that. It's a simple societal issue that you can't deal with that way with human beings, especially if you don't even know them. On the police report here, when they are dealing with the 19 post identifications, I've just seen two names where it's written. The others are names. The others, it just says unknown, meaning even the name is not known. Because you must remember mental health patients, they might have been dumped there 30 years ago by some relative. Somebody might have come from Mozambique to work in the mines, cohabit with some partner he found there, got mentally ill, and the patient said, oh, this person, I don't even know where they come from. Take them, put them in the mental health institution, and disappear. That can also happen. So the manner in which they were taken away, that's why the issue of life is demeaning. I mentioned in the press conference previously that I also suspected that maybe they were sabotaging. How do you send people away without their records? And the NGO, how do I take a human being who I know he's sick because he's from a hospital, and I don't have the records here to see what they are sick from, what they need to be treated with, what is the diagnosis, and yet I allow them into my house. And then you come and say, how did they know? These are adults. They must have known. So they were part of this auction. And that's why I agree with the UMBAT here that the NGOs must also account. You know, I know you keep on saying, no, where was monitoring and evaluation? Monitoring and evaluation is done after the act, always. People do a certain act, you go and monitor it. There must be mechanism to stop even that act from happening in the first place. And so I want you to understand that. Number 11, in the light of the findings in the report, the National Department of Health must review all 27 NGOs involving Gauteng Mara project that do not meet care standard, and those that do not meet standards should be deregistered, closed down, and have their license revoked in compliance with the law. I know that members here have expressed, and I've even heard in the press, people worried, why are you taking so long, it's dangerous, more people will die, we are very slow. I want to report this process very clearly, and I want to take it with recommendation number 13. As you know, this recommendation 11, if you take it with number 13 says, all patients from Lies Dimeni currently placed in unlawful NGOs must be urgently removed and placed in appropriate health establishment within the province where competencies to take care of their specialized needs are constantly available. This must be done within 45 days to reduce the risk and save lives. Simultaneously, a full assessment and costing must be undertaken. So the UMBAT said within 45 days about the relocation of these patients. You might say, no, that's too long, people are going to die. He was mindful of what happened. If you are in a hurry, what happened in Gauteng will eventually happen if you don't study the situation very well. So what did we do about these 12 recommendations? On the 4th of February, 3 days after the report was released by the UMBAT, I appointed 60 professional and technical experts in 6 disciplines. Those experts which were appointed were in psychiatry, psychology, social work, occupational therapy, psychiatric nursing, and environmental health. And the experts were from all over. Some are in the private sector, private practice. Others are in universities. Others are in provincial departments of health all over, not only in Gauteng and national. Others are in national. But there were a team of 60, and they divided themselves from the 6th to the 9th of February. That means over a period of 3 days, these experts have already visited all 27 NGOs, who amongst them have got a total of 42 facilities. They have visited these facilities. They even went to an extent, because they are professionals, of examining some of the patients. They even did that. And there are lots of patients here. They didn't just go in and peep. They even said these patients here need to be examined so that we must know what they have physically, mentally, and all that. That job was done within a period of 3 days by this expert. And I can confirm to date that because of this visit, 7 facilities have already been closed. They are no longer housing any mental health patients. They've been closed. And this closure, I want you to note, did not start within the 6th and the 7th, from the 6th and the 9th. It started in October. I've already reported to you that I sent a ministerial advisory committee on health. And within 48 hours, they phoned me and say we are closing precious entrance without even looking at other provisions because we are worried that more people will die. From there, the UMBAT himself, when he started the investigation, even before the final report was made, he will say, no, this and that must be closed. So this process of closing the 7 started in October because those are the most dangerous ones. As you told you, 80% of the deaths has happened in only 5 NGOs. These 5 are part of these 7 that was closed immediately. So it's not that anybody waited. We know where death was occurring, and we know the numbers, and we said, these ones cannot operate. As Honorable Mube has said, it's something which is sensitive, ma. And I agree with you. Talking about death, you can't say, no, this one was supposed to die, this one. Because there's an expectation that after this, nobody is supposed to die. Some dies in hospital under very good care, under extremely good care, as the professor said, that the psychiatrist in Life is Dimeni, at least within the little power they had, refused to release some of these patients when the NGOs came to pick them. And 360 were sent to hospital and 4 died. Those 4 died under very serious supervision and mental, you know, but you can't stand here and say, well, it's normal. Death is never normal. But on the other hand, we must not expect that it never happens. It does. The inquest is the one which will determine whether it happened under conditions that should have been prevented or that were criminal or wrongful. So these seven facilities were closed immediately to stop the amount of death that was taking place there, and they were stopped from October, when the ministerial task team visited 17 facilities out of the 27. And the closed facilities are as follows. It's Precious Angels, they own two facilities. One in Attridgeville, one is in Danville. They were closed in October immediately. Between Precious Angels and Cullinan Care and Mental Rehabilitation, half of the patients die there, just in these two. 50%. Yes. 50%. The Ombuds said 80% died in five. But I'm informing you that 50% died in two. And that one was closed immediately by the ministerial task team. Two NGOs which are operating the Cullinan Care and Rehabilitation Center, called Anchor and Siyabadinga, were also closed immediately by the Ombuds. I think it's in November. Yes, they were also, and I need to explain this because this Cullinan keeps on coming in. Even now, there's a story here that one more patient died there and we are not careful. Let me explain what happened. Cullinan Care and Rehabilitation Center is a government facility for mental health, just like Vescopis and Sterkfontein and all that. It's a government facility. What happened there, which clearly is illegal, the provincial department of health went to Cullinan. They demarcated it. They went in and cut in the middle and took four wards and said, this no longer belong to the hospital, they belong to NGOs. Yes, that's what happened. In other words, there's a CEO who was running the place, there were nurses, there were patients. If there was any death there, it was within normal limits, which is saying the unfortunate thing is that the Ombuds did not give you figures of normal mortality in government institution. And he gave you in life is demeaning and internationally. Maybe that's the figure that he need to go and research because he has got a huge power of research. What is that which you regarded as mortality? I can't say normal mortality because it's a different way. Normal death is a difficult way, but we know that death does occur. So Anchor and Siyabadinga did have deaths that were regarded within every hospital until this demarcation was done. And the demarcation says this site must be taken over by NGOs. Stand by the provincial department. You don't have any way to know at national unless they've invited you that we're going to demarcate the hospital. Because national is not in hospitals every day. The operations are run in provinces. As Honorable Matarale said, that we set standards, we set parameters. So they went to cut it. What is illegal? First of all, this is a government facility. You can't just cut it and give it to a private, because NGOs are private individuals. Some saying they are not for profit, but he has already said they were doing business and said the NGOs must take over this part of Cullinan. Now, those two NGOs called Anchor and Siyabadinga started the work. And because they were not paid, they could not even buy food or provide for these people. And that's when people started dying. Now, the hospital part, yes, the hospital part, which was now told to move out because these are NGOs, out of a feeling of consciousness, these are trained nurses and doctors, they just moved in. They just moved in and said, no, we can no longer look at this. They started cleaning, giving them food, and when they did so, they affect the whole hospital in terms of capacity. Because 141 patients were sent there in a hospital that could hardly accommodate, I don't know the figures, was it 200 or what? Yes? Yes, you in a hospital that can accommodate 140, you immediately add 141 people. Obviously something wrong will happen. So if the Auditor General has to move in,
he'll... Not that we have got 15 minutes left.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I, just on the point of proceedings, on the agenda, there was time set aside for asking questions after the Minister and the National Department speaks. It's on the agenda, and I just want to make sure that we have that time.
Okay. I get the warning, but I thought I needed to explain these things because they were asked. So at the moment, when you close NKN Siyabadinga, you don't close Cullinan because it's a government facility. You just take it back to normal where it was. So if somebody passes out there, it's not because, as I can see, it's been circulating over the media that somebody died there. It's a normal facility, which has been running, having deaths like any other hospital, etc., etc. But they are no longer normal. The other two which were closed were Rebafenyen and Erasmia in Pelindaba, and the last one, Bophelo Mashimong in Hammanskraal. Now, the other 22 NGs which are remaining, the recommendation is that we must also close them, not only because they've got invalid licenses, but because those which have got invalid licenses but are doing well, we said the HOD must validate them, because invalidity was simply that they were given by the director, who's not legally empowered. But if they meet standards in all the others, you don't close them, even though we're taking the patients away because recommendation number one says we must take them away. So those NGOs, they say we must close them. The process will start. The reason that it did not start, they only told us on Monday night, they still have to inform them. They can't hear from the media for the first time that they are being closed. So I just want you to know that that process is on. We are going to give them notices, and etc., etc. But having said so, the team was working with families. Not all families, but family representatives. Section 27 said that they were not going alone because we want everything to be transparent. And the family said, please, make sure that you don't do a hurried job, even if you have to take people away. Some of these people are scared. Others are refusing that I'm not going to move because they are thinking about the way they were moved before, and they think the same thing is going to happen. So they've already given notice that I'm going nowhere. So don't think we just to pick them like a parcel. Some are saying, no, I'm here now, leave me. They are going to have to be convinced by psychologists that this time it won't be like that. And it must be done meticulously. That's what I've said in the media. And I'm still saying so. Recommendation 12, 13, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17 are work in progress about what the national department must do, etc. Now, the last one, which I think is important without wasting your time because you raised it, the Umbat is complaining about that data. Now, I want to report to this house because I want to report it to you in the portfolio committee. You might not be connecting them, but we have reported to you. The government doesn't have a health information system in this country that can trace a person from one institution to the other. And when you transport them carelessly like this, like it happened in Life Domain, you will get lost in terms of information. You won't know. It does not exist. 22 years later, after 4.5 billion rand was spent by all 9 provincial departments of health for an information system, we don't have. Because in the information technology, people sell. I come with this tender, take it, another MEC come in, take a new one. So 5 years ago, to resolve this issue, we met with the CSIR, the Department of Science and Technology, Home Affairs, and say, even the World Organization advised that. They said we need a unique patient identifier. We met and developed that system. It took us 5 years. It's a very complex system. We now have it where, if it's implemented, we can trace one person from the other. We started implementing it in the 700 facilities that are in the NHI pilot project, whereby part of your ID, all of you are going to be on that system. Part of your ID is in the middle of that number. It becomes your lifelong number. Once we give it to you, it's from cradle to the grave. Whether you go to a private hospital or public, you code that number. It's also going to happen for NHI. So at the moment, it's not Gauteng which can do this because it must be national. We are doing it. Only that in Gauteng, we started last because there was resistance from... As you are talking about resistance, we have experienced. Don't think you are the only ones. Everybody has experienced that resistance. But we have moved. So that system, as I'm speaking, is now in 650 facilities countrywide, and we have just started with doing it in some provinces. We have registered 4.5 million people. By the end of the financial year, we believe about 7 million or so people have been registered. But it's not something that can produce results immediately now. I just want you to know it's work in progress. As to the questions of members here, Chairperson, that was the progress. There are a number of questions which have been asked, and I'm sure the DG is going to deal with them. But one of them was the relationship of the minister with provinces. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it's very easy, but I'm not enemies with provinces. But where they want to code the law, stubbornly they do so. And they say, just like I told with the Inquest Act. But many MECs cooperate. For instance, Livest Domain is not only in Gauteng, you have learned. In Limpopo is there under social development. But the MEC for Health, Madres Mashamba, she's not even my MEC. When they were pushing her to close that Livest Domain, she came to me and said, we are being pushed to close Livest Domain in Limpopo. Minister, can you help? I immediately put up a team consisting of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Mental Health, which I've already mentioned, the Directorate and other experts. They went to Limpopo, they investigated, and they said no. I was told before that we want to do this, and I said no. If she wanted to go on, she would have done so, like in the Eastern Cape. I wanted to know. Somebody raised the question about MINMEC. This issue of routing was not raised in MINMEC at any stage. What was done in MINMEC was to adopt the mental health strategy, which I've told you. Nobody from Gauteng came and raised the issue in MINMEC that we are going to deinstitutionalize or move patients around. It never happened because it would have been discussed with all the other MECs and reached. And MINMEC is a statutory body, fortunately. But the issue was never raised at any stage of our existence. I think I'll leave the others to. Yeah, that question from Dr. Khosa will have to have been done. I'm assuring you, at the moment there are 700 patients, not 1,300 in the NGOs. 600, as I'm speaking, are either with government mental health institutions or general public hospitals. They are being taken care of. Now, how fast can we move these people? The DG phoned all the private hospitals in the country. There's a belief that we are running away from them. She phoned them, all the CEOs of private hospitals. They all said they don't have any mental health facilities. They can't take anybody. They've got beds, but not for mental health. The only one that has got beds for mental health is Livest Domain in four places. There is a call that we must immediately take the person there. I was in discussion with the CEO of Life Health for the whole of yesterday, for the most part of yesterday in the morning. He said, remember, Minister, after this patient were taken by vents, we de-established our institution. For 9 months, it was not running. So we are not ready to take anybody. We need to re-prepare to re-establish the institution. Workers went away. Facilities were downgraded, etc. So they said they can only welcome 75 patients within a week. And the rest, they said they need 8 weeks in order to accept any bed back from back where they have been. So I just want you to understand that.
Chair, I'm really sorry to do this, but just on the point of procedure, and I don't want to interrupt the minister speaking.
I finished.
But we were supposed to finish at 25 to 1, so that there's a chance for this committee to ask questions, because our first round of questions was directed at the Ombudsman, not at the National Department, and I deferred my questions to now. So I'd like to know, Chair, that we will have 20 minutes to pose questions. I have some serious questions to ask to the National Ministry, and we'll have that time, and there will be a response to those.
No, thanks very much. It's time for questions. DG, you'll clap all the questions that are going to be asked now together with the previous one, then you'll be able to respond accordingly. It's time for questions now on the progress. Honorable James, who else wants to ask question? Honorable Ndaba, Ngobe Ndaba, who else wants to ask? Only the two? Oh, okay. Honorable James?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for those responses. Let me say that I'm satisfied with clearly with the Ombudsman's report and the response to that and the actions taken by the Minister. But I'd like to return to the question of responsibility. It's clear that the frontline responsibility lies where the Ombudsman targeted that responsibility. But there are some further questions about how much further it radiates. Firstly, with the DG, the DG knew and was alerted to the issue end of 2015, and then there was a court order that ruled in favor of Gauteng Health, and in between that, there was a lot of discussion and so on. But effectively, the issue, you let go of the issue. And you're on record as saying that that was probably an error, that you should have had a court order against Gauteng Health, and that's a question of judgment. And I don't want to sit in judgment of you. We all have responsibilities, and we all have lapses. And I really do not want to judge you on this question, but I do need to ask you the question as to why you made that judgment call, because it clearly was an error. And that's a question not of the law, it's not a question of regulations, it's not even a question of accountability, it's a question about judgment taken about when to take action within the law in order to remedy the issue. So that's my first question. And that's a really hard one, because I mean, I think you're an excellent DG, and you excel globally in your work, and so it's not about that, it's about judgment. The second issue is to do with the role of Dr. Terence Carter in this. Did he know? Did he report to the minister? Did he report to you? What was the information flow there? Dr. Terence Carter is a distinguished man. He was the CEO of Tigerberg Hospital, Groteskere Hospital, and the minister appointed him to look after hospitals as a DDG. And so he is no longer with the department. He is not here. This is not a court of law. And perhaps you cannot answer that question. But the minister can answer the question, finally, as to when he first knew about this and what he did about it at every step of the way. Because when you did know, in the end, as you said, you appointed the Ombudsman to look into it. But, you know, the train had left the station a long time ago. And there are various points in which you could have acted if you had known. And so I'm not asking it in a judgmental way either. Just for the record, I'd like to know in this committee when you first knew and what you did about it. So the final point, I think that what this country has a national database, patient database, and I think that's quite right, and it's being remedied after a lot of money has been wasted. It's fundamentally important to any national system for health. But what you also lack is a proactive surveillance system. In the Office of Health Standards Compliance, you have a body that by law is actually quite passive. And I'm not blaming the office. It's by law designed to be quite passive. It reacts. It can't sniff out problems. It needs to be an active body. It needs to be an active surveillance body. In as much as you have an active infectious disease surveillance body like the NICD. And so there's something wrong. And if you don't have an active surveillance system and you don't have the data and information going to the top, you have a minister that doesn't know. And that's unacceptable. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think with regards to my second question on the health Office of Health Standard Compliance, Honourable James have covered me. But Chair, I think I've got one question that I want to raise with regards to the two different death dates which the Ombudsman have spoken about. I just want to check what is the relationship with of the mortuaries regarding the two different dates, whether that act was done by the NGOs or the mortuaries. Thank you very much.
I can answer that. The data came from the department
of mental health in Gauteng. It did not come from the mortuaries. I'm getting 2 days from the same, source.
No, thanks very much. I'll hand over to the DG, and then later the minister will close. But then the DG, you should deal with the question that I raised earlier on.
Yes.
Where you said you commissioned Professor Freeman to prepare a report for the minister. What happened to that report? That links to the issue that Honorable James raised. When did the minister knew about this? Because in terms of this process, according to the presentation that you did, it means the minister, through this report of Professor Freeman, should have known even long before the process was, the transfer was done and everything else. In terms of what we have indicated in the submission that we have made to the Ombudsman.
Well, thank you very much, honourable members. I want to start by responding to the question on the provisions of the Mental Health Act. I duly requested the legal opinion in terms of my powers in this Act, and I want to read that section so that you all know what the provisions of this section is. It says before people, and this deals with procedures about dealing with mental health patients and mental health care. The superintendent, now the 1973 Act actually still makes reference to superintendent. We do not have superintendents in this country anymore. It says superintendent, medical practitioner in writing, is the one who will discharge the patient if he is fit to be discharged. But that will be done only, and I want to read 15.3. It says, if the court or the judge or DG directs that a patient be discharged. So it's three. And in terms of that three, and I want to read, when I asked this opinion, it was for this purpose. In December, remember from October, I was engaging with civil society. I did not get this information from Gauteng. It's civil society that brought this to my attention. And when they brought it to my attention, I facilitated engagement. And I want to read an email from December 2012, the 22nd, from the HOD. DG, based on this agreement that I was facilitating, agreement, not plan. There's no plan. It's a court that is directing that patients must not be moved. Now, you tell me, do I replace the court? I will tell you, no, I can't. The court had intervened, but I still got involved because I facilitated. And I want to read this. Dear DG, on the 22nd of December, kindly receive an agreement between Health, Provincial Health, and SADC, in bracket section 27. This is an out-of-court settlement. We have avoided going to court on the matter we could agree on. When I say this is what I regretted, I want to tell you what is in tail so that you understand. The four applicants in the urgent application in the South Gauteng High Court, between Gauteng and Life City, many as respondents. It says that, noting that the parties agreed that the best interest of the users currently placed in Life City, many are paramount, and that the rights of these users are of common concern to all parties. It's hereby further noted that litigation is just by a means to an end. And in itself, the parties need to find each other. On the basis of what has been proven, that the parties must talk and resolve the matter and reach an out-of-court settlement. Honorable James, when I kept on saying I regret, that out-of-court settlement is written in that paper. It's what I say, perhaps this should have been a court of
court order, not an out-of-court settlement. I can go further, Chair, and say that the applicants filed an application, and this is the one I'm referring to. And I also want to remind you that it says they had to ensure that on that 22nd of December, that they had to develop a plan, and ensure that by no later by the 31st of January, and this is the agreement, the parties would have concluded this. As of December, there was no plan. You want to know? On the basis of this, what I regret is to say, at the time when they were signing the agreement, whether this agreement should have been a court order or whether an out-of-court settlement. And this is what I want to clarify so that you understand. It's not lack of judgment. It's also what the courts have written themselves to say, the parties, we can't be working on the basis of moving patients, on the basis of courts, if we can have an understanding. And this is a commitment that Gauteng did. Even in the email, they say if we could agree, why make it a court order? So I should have started by being suspicious of the HOD that he was not going to execute. This is not how we work. You start by trusting that people would have delivered. And I want to say that the parties agree to reserve their respective right to recourse. Now, this is December. Now, between December, when this agreement is signed, what is expected is that we'll get the plan. That does not happen. Professor Mel Freeman keeps on following up with the province to say, can we get the plan? It does not happen. In March, they end up in court, Gauteng and civil society. And the judgment is that Gauteng won. I phoned civil society. I phoned Gauteng. What is this court about now? Because there's an agreement. The response from civil society is that Gauteng lied in court. I say, but what do you mean? How could they have won? They say they misled the judge. I asked Gauteng, I did not get the response. In June 2016, I get my official, who is responsible for environmental health services, saying, DG, we want to go and inspect the facility. And we've been told the MEC say we shouldn't go. Now, I want to know in this meeting whether if you have provisions in the law, you send inspectors, you facilitate meetings, what else should you do? This is what we have done. And I can tell you, our officials did. Of course, Professor Mel Freeman, in October, when we had this, I can read what is in the submission. We prepared a submission. We send it to the minister to bring it to his attention. But Mel Freeman, in that process, said we needed more information. He went back to get information from Gauteng, which was not forthcoming. That submission was sent. It was sent in December. Like I say, this is what we've done as officials. But I read the act, and I got an opinion. I can read what the opinion says, and I got it from Sasha from Section 27 to say, what other powers do I have in terms of that act? What is it that I can do in terms of this act? And I want to read. As promised, we have looked into your powers under the Mental Health Act. This is a lawyer telling me, because I want to intervene. Unfortunately, Regulation 43 of the general regulations to that act makes clear that the power to license community care facilities lie with the province. Your other powers under this act are general in nature, except where it concerns state patients. And may I remind this meeting and this gathering that that specific provision was amended so that where there are delegations, I can go back and show you the delegations that are specifically requested in terms of the state patients. And it says necessary facts and possible areas for your intervention potentially would be Section 100, and I do not even think I have those powers either. This is the advice I got at the time. But I also needed to remind this meeting also that it is in this meeting again where I expressed the frustration when provinces fail to pay NHLS at the height of Ebola. At the height of Ebola, I wrote every single institution in this country. I wrote the Auditor General, I wrote Parliament, I wrote Treasury, I wrote everybody. I said, we've got a looming disaster. If Ebola hits South Africa, we'll be unable to respond because provinces have not paid their bills and the labs are going to be closed. I did that. And you know what? I took the money, I paid them. You read my annual report. It said it's irregular. And I stopped there.
CEO, before you come to the mess.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I would respond to the issue of the attorney's letter that we have received. But before I respond on that, I would like to respond to the question that was raised by Honorable James. The act that established the Office of Standard Compliance allows us to continuously monitor the facilities. And within the office, we are in the process of establishing the early warning system. In fact, we are piloting the early warning system in four provinces with certain indicators that would allow provinces to report on a weekly basis, to report on events. So there is a system that we established, but is still in the piloting process. It's not by saying that the office will just react after. We will put the systems in place that will assist us to monitor the facilities. We are still piloting the system. I will go back to the issue of the letter. We received the letter from the attorneys of the head of department from Gauteng on the 5th of January, of February. They were saying, we request to be urgently provided with a complete record of the information that the Ombudsman of Health considered in arriving at the findings and recommendation in the above report. Now, for us, it was a bit difficult to understand what information they are referring to. We wrote back to them and requested that can they be specific in terms of the report that they are requesting so that we can respond to their request. This week on Tuesday, I received a letter. The letter was stating 29 items that they were requesting, which includes the evidence of the expert panel, the recordings and the record, and because their initial request was really related to the events that led to the health ombuds recommending the suspension of the head of department. But the second letter was stating many issues. It was 29 issues that they were requesting from the office. We responded back to them yesterday, saying that because they are requesting a lot of information, we are requesting them to comply with PIA. We also attached a form to say, this is the PIA form, kindly complete the form so that we can deal with the request when we know that we are following the law. They have not yet responded. I'm sure today they will respond. So that is the issue we are dealing with Gauteng. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, let me start by saying this. It is not that myself, as the minister who commissioned the Umbats, and the Umbats said he did not interrogate me because in terms of the law, people are going to appeal to me, and it's not that we were not investigated, even though we did not appear there. We were investigated through our officials. And if you read this report about what Professor Freeman said, he clearly said that report, which was supposed to have sent to me, never reached me because he wanted to get information from Gauteng. What he has written in the beginning was just the act, what the act says, but he said in order to know whether there is any transgression, he needs to know the plan from Gauteng, he needs to know their decision, he needs to know what they must do. That's when he started exchanging emails with them to get this information because he said, Minister, I've got nothing to report to you because we are written by NGOs and all that. but we don't know exactly what this Gauteng is up to. If I sit in their meetings or see their plan, I will then be able to judge it against our standards and know whether there is a disaster looming or not. But they never invited him to any meeting, as he said. They never even gave him any plan, as he told the Umbats. He even gave the two emails. There were many, but he only gave those where he thought in order to get it, he must revoke my name. What I believe maybe should have done, but we all look at this thing retrospectively, was to come to my office and say, Minister, I'm knocking against a closed door. Please, is there any power you can use in one way or the other? Perhaps with the Premier or so. But unfortunately, we all learn. Because I even told him that, Prof, you should have come to me and say, Minister, there is, you know, I'm trying to find information about what is going to go on in Gauteng. My doors are closed. Is there anyway? Instead, he wrote them two emails to say, in other words, to use my name as a scarecrow and say the minister was this information, please give it to me. At that time, I was not even aware that there were emails. I saw them in here. Then I called him and asked him, how? I see my name in this, professor. What was going on? He said, no, I was under pressure to come and report to you, but I virtually had nothing to report. And I was going to look like a fool just to come to your office and say, something is going to happen around him, but I don't know what. Now, I want to emphasize, Chairperson, again, I do have very good relationship with MECs, but if somebody wants to hide something deliberately, when they've got authority to do so, they will, if it's deliberate. I once came here to this legislature and told you that we are in a very unfortunate situation as national ministers under this act, which the Prof said must review, whereby we have got responsibilities without authority. You are giving responsibility, but there's no authority. Every time you wait for a disaster, then in terms of Section 101, you move in. But, you know, so that is the problem we're having, and I don't want to start arguing a legal argument, because I believe DG, even if this thing was made an order of court, which you say you are regretting, I've got cause to believe Gauteng was still going to act the way they did. Even with that, because why am I saying so? Because I told you MINMEX is a statutory structure, and we took a decision about how to implement all this Mental Health Act and all that. It was taken in MINMEX. The fact that Gauteng went to breach it and set it aside is also a breach that needs to be investigated when you are starting investigating criminality or not, you know? So they will still have forgotten. And the fact that they are giving the profile, and I don't know whether I'm wrong again, three different numbers of death. It's possible that they might have been hiding something, but I can tell you, my honest belief is that they didn't know. How will you know when you don't know even know who went where? Because you did not send the people there, they came and collected. Surely the NGOs were not with anybody from Gauteng when they went there to collect. They just came with certificates. All that Gauteng did was to tell its demand that we are closing. In fact, I understand they were even told, it's in the report, that we are not closing you, we are just taking our patients away. Well, so you can't complain that I'm closing you. Is it not there, Prof? That MEC was saying, look, I'm not closing you down as life is demanding. I'm taking my patient away. But the patients were not taken away by the department, by the NGOs who were bringing this invalid license. So in that regard, how are you to know who is where? Come into the Office of Health Standard Compliance. The office, that act was passed by you here about what they must inspect. There's nothing about NGOs. They wouldn't have known that the NGOs who have taken patients if nobody told them. They can't just patch into Atteridgeville and go to Precious Angels if they were not told. They then went in terms of the act after knowing that a patient who must be taken care of under the act is being kept by an NGO. Their inspection to check, even the surveillance system is saying they are setting up. Believe you me, if they finish setting up and patients are secretly taken to NGOs, that surveillance system won't work. It won't. Even our filing system that I'm talking about, which will help trace a patient from one place to the other, because it won't be attached to NGOs, because it was not planned to be that way. is being implemented in clinics. Now we need to go back to the drawing board to check this issue of NGOs in terms of the Mental Health Act. How do they work? It says before you do that, you must establish teams in each district. And I've mentioned the teams, psychiatrists, etc. Now, since we started, we only have 7 teams. That means only 7 districts. The irony and the biggest irony is that out of these 7, out of 52 districts, out of these 7, one is in Tshwane, where most of the deaths occurred. Because even that team was not consulted or told anything. In other words, they were set up, but when this job was done, they were also pushed aside. They would have known at least and come to me and say, Minister, we were appointed according to this act. This is what's supposed to do. Something happening. That team also knew nothing. So this was looking like some conspiracy that was going on. Now, the professor is telling us that year, Professor James, that we lack active civilians. It is true. We don't have such a system. But this parliament, if I remind you, we have just passed the NAPISA Act. We came to you and told you that we don't have any civilian system. I don't know how many patients die of motor vehicle accident within my database, except to hear from the Minister of Transport to check how, you know, I don't know how many patients are dying of cancer, except the newly established cancer register. I don't know. That information is not there. So we came to you and told you that we have got this weakness. We want a civilian system, just like the CDC. It's like the CDC. In America, they've got the CDC. If a certain number of deaths occurs in one corner of the country, they will know immediately that there's something abnormal there. Something is happening which you don't understand and go investigate. That is what the NAPISA is going to do. And we came to Parliament to inform you about that. And the NAPISA Act is in the process, DG, if I'm not mistaken. It is the first civilian system that we're going to do. Same as what Africa established 2 weeks back in Addis Ababa, the African CDC. They also did it after Ebola. How so many people died before anybody in the world could know that people are dying? Because they were already dying in rural areas. By the time the world knew, lots of people have already died, the disease was spreading, because there's no civilians. So the NAPISA is going to bring in the cancer registrar, is going to bring in the NIOH, National Institute of Occupational Health, etc. And they will be able to say, Minister, watch out. We are picking up within a period of a week in one of the corner of the country. Something happened. At the moment, I confess we don't have such civilian system. And the Office of Health Standard Compliance is still also trying to establish them. Thank you very much. Sorry? Yes, the professor is saying Cuba has got an excellent system. We can't compare ourselves with Cuba. But even maybe just to finish up, you are aware that we are also establishing what we call war boards. You have heard about them, primary health care teams. Part of the reason is this. Can you know what is happening inside the household even before it comes to the health system? Can we start knowing and pick up what is happening in each and every house? Only community health workers will come and help us because they will be part of the system. Thank you very much.
No, thanks very much. I'll hand over to the co-chair to make the closing remarks so that we close.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mashalela. Let me take this opportunity and thank the Office of the Ombudsman for the report, Minister, and the delegation. Honorable members, just to indicate that due to the nature of the problem, we think this is not the last engagement. We will be looking forward for continuous oversight from our side, but also a briefing on the appeal that is pending, and also know what does it mean to the report itself, the status of the report. But also, there are 6 recommendations that are made to Gauteng province on the report, which would want to get progress on the implementation from the province itself. Unfortunately, Honorable Minister, and the province of Gauteng, you go to find each other because you are dealing with the lives of our people. There is no other way. For the sake of our people, there must be working together between the province and national
we will raise with them because we're dealing with the lives of our people. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I can't leave this meeting without clarifying this. On the first day Dr. Gwen Ramokopa was appointed, she said with me, even yesterday in the press conference, we prepare together, we are working together. This is not an issue about province of etc. It's about individual deciding what to do.
Okay.
She is working with me. Recommendation number one is what I've read here in Gauteng. It's been done at the national level. The other recommendations, I am working with her around the clock. We are on the phone. We are cooperating fully. We are even going to help her to re-establish the department because there's no more a department there. The HOD is gone. The mental health director is gone. Deputy directors, etc. It needs a lot of panel beating. And she has already asked me that we are going to have to send teams nationally to come and work with you. You know when there was a problem of TB in Limpopo. I went there. And the MEC was sitting with me. We were cooperating on what to do and helping each other. So I don't think there's an issue between us and Gauteng. It was just an individual who was there. And I don't know the motive. Many people ask me about the motive. I still don't know it. It's very difficult to find out what the motive here was. All we know that there was a concerted effort to do things by force and hide all the information and do things that were not supposed to be done. Was the motive money? The NGOs are too poor to give anybody money, so I still cannot make out. Maybe you'll help me here. What drives a human being to do something like this?
No, thank you very much, Minister. We really appreciate that, but we would want to know until the last patient is attended, as Parliament will want to be informed. The meeting stand adjourned. Thank you.
Do you have the names of the delegates? I just want to copy them. Okay.
Can I ask you something? Don't give the register to the members to sign. Rather, you have this. That's what your colleagues usually do.
Okay.
They have this and they write like this. And if they do not know who is here, they will ask, who was that member? Is that a new member? Then I will tell them that. So. But don't give them the register.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to go to the next one. Ini di bahasa Indonesia, cincin kok interview lagi, bos.